Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It was quite a meeting. I didn't get home until 10, about 10:10.
I take it, it was a contentious meeting.
Oh, it was good. You know, it's the yearly, you know, new board members coming on and new president and plans for the year and who's going to fund the corned beef dinner and all the reports and, you know, at least this year I could sit and just be a participant. I didn't have to give a report or do anything.
Oh, good.
To just listen.
So, you ready to start?
Yes. Am I the only one, or you have someone else?
No. So far, you're the only one.
Okay.
Do you want to wait? We can, or we can start.
It's up to you. I don't mind going on.
All right. We're on verse 184.
Malcolm.
And we have. Good evening.
Good evening.
So we are starting with section 21 of Parasha Lech Lecha in the Sulam commentary, and we're going to start in verse 184 after we say the Lishem Yehud. L'shem yichud kudshab rishu ishkite bit hilu urhimu uthilu uthilu urhimu. L'yakta l'shem yud he bavavhe. V'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asok Torah mitzvah. V'ayhino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'aseh yadeinu k'nerne aleinu ma'aseh yadeinu k'nernehu. V'yi ite ma'ah. Chamenan chama malkinawo Tishaltin bezimna Bebeit hamikdash kaim Al alma tachatse Bebayit rishon adla seivu Yisrael ara lahawo shaltin She'ar amin a'akom elai tzedu mitam sit. Uvahawo shaltin ulav palkach kewan dechavu. Yisrael v'saivu ara kedem kivyakor. Gaho la lishkinta. Me'atra ve'it karvat leduta achara ukdein shaltin sha'ar amin ve'it yahev lon rishu l'shalta'a. The translation. You may say, but we can't. Hold on a second. It jumped a bit. You may say, but we can see that many foreign kings ruled, even when the temple was still in the world. Come and see. During the first temple, Israel had not yet defiled the land. As a result, the other nations did not yet rule completely. Rather, they were nourished from the residue. And because their dominion was nourished by this residue, their rule was not very powerful. But as Israel sinned and defiled the land, it was as if they drove the Shekhinah from her place to another place. And then the other nations took control and were allowed to rule. My commentary. This pasuk is clear as written. Its statement is true. If a historian would look at human history in the Holy Land, there would be many facts available to support this pasuk. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Clear as red. No, go ahead.
I have questions.
Go ahead.
Can you just kind of refresh our memory as to how the Israelites defiled the land? And the next question would be, the Shekinah, did it go back up into Zeron Pan, up into the upper heavens when they did sin? And the nations, was it like one nation at a time that came in every time Israel sinned? Because when another nation came in, they didn't last long in the land, then someone else would come and conquer that nation, and so forth and so on.
So your first question is, how did the Israelites defile the land?
Yeah. What was the main cause? I know there was fighting amongst them, right? And they did start worshiping idols.
And they also studied Torah without a blessing.
Torah without a blessing?
Yes.
What does that mean?
We say the L'shem Yehud before we study Torah.
Mm-hmm.
In the morning, we have a blessing. We have a number of blessings that we say, but two of them apply to the words of Torah. And one applies to striving to become a living Torah. La sokta ba Torah is striving to become a living Torah. So by making that request, that's the consciousness that we draw the energy to and through. But in the first temple days, they did not make that blessing when they sat down to study Torah. And so what the verse is saying, when Israel sinned, whenever somebody sins, especially in the Holy Land, but it applies everywhere, just not to the same degree. When someone sins, they cause the land to become defiled. And as the land became more and more defiled, greater and greater defiled, the other nations were allowed to take over the land. So during the first temple times, it was Sanhedrin was the name of the king who lived in Syria, and he conquered the 10 tribes. But he really didn't take control of Jerusalem, because Judah was still there. The tribe of Judah was still in Jerusalem. And he didn't really do anything with the land other than move the 10 tribes according to his manner, which was to take any peoples he conquered, he moved them about 500 miles away and replaced them in that area with the people from the 500 miles away. So that the people were out of touch with the land, They were introduced into a new area, and since it was a time of idol worship, people used to have a god that was associated with their plots of land, with that area. And so they would start praying to the new people, to the new god. To them was a new god, but it was the people around knew that god, knew that that was the god of that particular area. So those are the things that they did that defiled the land. If you pray to an idol, you're defiling the land. You're causing the land to take on that negative characteristic.
But when he replaced them with the other people, those weren't the Israelites that were, they weren't called Israelites. The ones that were removed from there were called Israelites. So it wasn't that group of people that group of people that were praying to the idols was not the Israelites, right? But are you saying
correct.
That the Israelites? Okay, so they, that group of people, that's not true Israelites, defile the land. But where we're talking
about
Israel.
No.
Okay.
The 10 tribes were praying in the land. And they were praying in the land of Ephraim, the land of Israel, it's called.
Okay.
They were praying, but they were praying, they were doing idol worship. They were studying Torah without saying a blessing. They were doing all kinds of negative actions, even though that, you know, they were in the 10 tribes. So that's why Sanhedrin was given permission to conquer the land, the 10 tribes. But he wasn't really powerful in the land of Israel. He moved the people, and the new people went about doing what they were doing. And the name starts with an S. I always forget the name of the group, because that group, when they moved in, continued to worship. You know, they came in and said, who's the god of this area? And they were told Hashem. So they started to pray to Hashem. And they started to, you know, go up to Hashem's house in the temple and do all these things that, even though they weren't Jewish, but they did the Jewish rituals. But the land was defiled by these actions of the Jews before Sanhedrin conquered them, and then even more so, step by step, as the other new people did these actions, and the tribe of Judah let the people come. They didn't tell them stay away from Jerusalem, they let them come. So it was all of these kinds of actions that defiled the land, but most of it was done by the 10 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the temple was destroyed, that was the end of it. But what the verse is saying, it was a process of defiling the land that caused the land to allow the other nations to come in.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what your second question was. I don't remember it.
well, let's stay right here for a bit, just a second. So in the first temple time, did they forget from their ancestors how to say the blessing before they studied Torah? Did they not learn from their ancestors? That's what you do? I mean, they were in the wilderness.
In the five books of Moses, the only blessings that are taught comes from the Kohanim, the blessings of the Kohanim. The mitzvah was for the Kohanim to stand and
all right.
Okay. Now, again, prayer has changed over the centuries. So in the first temple, they said the Ten Commandments, the Ten Utterances. But they also, you know, they didn't do the Shema. They did, you know, they sang the Psalms that King David had written. The things that they knew, they did. But then in the second temple, they added some other additional prayers. They replaced the Ten Utterances by the Shema. They did all these different things that affected it. The Amidah was started in the second temple. It wasn't available in the first temple. It was individually. In the first temple, people would take an hour to prepare for the prayer. Then they would pray for an hour. And then they would recover from their prayer and assimilate the connection that they had received through that prayer. So every day, three times a day, they were spending 3 hours. But when they did sit down to study, they forgot to bless.
And why did they forget to bless? I mean, they're in the land.
Because they didn't really have blessings. They didn't consider Torah study to be important. They thought the prayers were the only thing that was important. They read the Torah, they read the scroll, but it was an agrarian community. So those days when they were harvesting, they didn't pray and they didn't study. And, they just didn't follow the appropriate things. And so Hashem would send the prophets to wake them up. The prophets would go try and wake them up. And from one generation to the next, as we study in the book of Joshua and the book of Judges and the book of Samuel and the beginning of Kings, we study how, the people would be righteous. The leader was righteous. And then the leader would start to stray and follow different idols, or the people would follow different idols, and the leader didn't tell them. So Hashem would send a prophet to wake them up and bring them back. And they would go through these cycles of being close to Hashem and far from Hashem. And so it was a step-by-step process. And it wasn't until the Jewish people invited the Romans into Israel to protect them from the Egyptian, the new power of Egypt. It was only when that happened that it started to go down and the second temple got destroyed. So, and it was only at that point that the exile became onerous. Prior to that, we knew we were in exile. There was less light, less revelation, but it wasn't onerous in the sense like it is today. I mean, it is today, but people don't realize it's onerous because they're so comfortable living in America and living in even Western Europe and living in areas of the world where there are parts of the world that is very onerous. Syria, wherever there's these wars, Vietnam in the 60s, all of these areas, and those areas were onerous. But for the most part, the majority of the people and the majority of the Jewish people don't even feel the lack of the temple anymore. They don't understand what it means that the temple isn't there. But it's this process where the other nations were given permission one by one to take over the land of Israel. And as they did so, they made it more difficult, more onerous for the exile and the people in the exile. I hope I'm not confusing you, because I've jumped around a lot in that discussion.
No, oh, no, I'm fine.
Okay.
I think Hannah had something to say.
Well, I don't remember if it was First Temple or Second Temple, but I remember the leader told them they didn't have to go to Jerusalem to worship Hashem. And he also
changed the First Temple.
Okay, and also that they didn't have to, he changed the date. I think it was a Sukkot. It's not worded, as Sukkot, but certain day of a certain month, Anyway, changed the date of the holidays. And of course, there was murder, there was sexual improprieties, there was idol worship.
Mm-hmm.
No.
And then in the second temple, there was hatred, sinat hinam, there was hatred for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wondered, since the second temple didn't have the Ark of the Covenant, did Hashem still come on Yom Kippur? In the Holy of Holies?
Yes, but there was no ark there to activate the priest.
The priest would still perform the incense and the blood where the foundation was, which was between the poles, if the poles would have been there. But I've never read anything. Once I found out that it wasn't there, I wondered if the same thing still happened, because it was only once a year on Yom Kippur,
No, it still happened, but essentially the high priest, it got to the point where the high priest was sold to the highest bidder. And he died, every year he died on Yom Kippur. He bought his priesthood, and he had it from the death of the previous one on Yom Kippur to his death on Yom Kippur. But essentially, they went through a whole number of people because they weren't doing it properly.
Right.
So basically, the 10 tribes were the cause and effect because of their idol worship.
And murder, sexual license.
Yeah, and all that. Yeah, so, and that was in Ephron? Is that where they were in the land, in Israel, but in the territory of Ephron?
Ephraim, yes. It was called the land of Ephraim.
Okay.
Because Ephraim had the king.
Right.
And that king told the people, you can't go up to Jerusalem, and he would have his soldiers watch the road so nobody went up to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What does Kabbalah say about the ark and where it possibly, what happened to it after the first temple was destroyed? That was not carried. That wasn't carried from, Rome didn't carry that, did they? They took a lot of the vessels.
According to my studies, didn't get it.
Go ahead, Anna.
Well, that's what I'm working on, for the last few months. And as far as I know, Rome did not get the Ark. The people from the Temple Institute say that the Ark is not lost, that they know where it is, and when the time comes for it to be brought forth, it'll be brought forth. There's still the people in Ethiopia that say they guard it. Then there's another person who says he found it underneath the cave of Golgotha, where the man from Nazareth was buried. And that's what I've been studying in our having a session for the ladies.
So when you have your session, we'll have our answer.
Well, I just said I had a book in 1988, and that it pictures the whole day of Yom Kippur, page by page, picture by picture, of what the high priest did on Yom Kippur. And it shows the mark dotted. In other words, it wasn't really there on the, in the second temple, but where the blood was placed. Whereas today, there is a group that's saying the ark is under this cave of Golgotha, and had to do with...
And others say it's in the catacombs under the temple itself.
Right. And
what? Repeat that?
There are other groups that say that it's under the... It's in the catacombs. It's buried in the hallways in the... Somewhere in the mountain that is the Temple Mount.
Okay.
But it's all been covered over. We don't know exactly where it is. And as you said, as Hannah said, the Temple Institute says that they know where it is, but they're not going to reveal it until it's time. But they're preparing for all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we the other week, not too long ago, we talked about how by accepting money that was tainted by idol worship, mm-hmm. that the things they're preparing are not going to last. But essentially, nobody knows, and we're waiting for Mashiach, but we're stopping to wait for Mashiach, and we're going to positively bring Mashiach. And that's a whole change of consciousness. And that's what we're trying to do. Stop waiting for Mashiach and bring Mashiach.
Right.
Well, I don't understand the concept of Mashiach coming to us personally. I guess maybe that might be a Good Wednesday question.
It's a little long for this time of night, so.
Right, right.
Since today is Wednesday.
Oh, it sure is.
You can bring the question. And I will tell you, I have no idea.
Well, we
may have
never
heard me, you've never heard me say that. But we'll see what we can come with. We'll see what Hashem puts into my mind when you ask that question tonight.
Mm-hmm. Hope I can get on.
You all have a good evening.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.